Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 42 of Flashpoint. It's a bit of a special one this fortnight because we're devoting it to the Secret World, and more specifically to an interview with the Secret World's game director, Joel Bylos. And I'll say a quick hi, or a longer hi, to Joel in a sec. But for those wondering, well, what the hell's happened to the rest of the format of the show, episode 43 will come out later tonight as well. So we'll have the usual format. This is a bit of a special edition. So let's jump into it. So as I've just introduced Joel, he's the game director of the Secret World. Joel, welcome.
Yeah, g'day. How are you guys going?
Good. And as you'll notice, if you didn't already, and I know people that follow the Secret World closely already do, Joel's an expat Aussie. Where did you actually, I know you said you're from New South Wales, you sort of around Newcastle area or something?
I studied at Newcastle, but I'm actually from Yamba on the east coast.
Oh, so no, yep. Nice area. So,
yeah, it's a bit tough in the winters in Norway, I have to tell you.
It would be.
Compared to sunny Yamba.
And I just realised too that, and he's so polite, is that I haven't mentioned that I'm here with the guy that I just said to Joel makes his podcast, and I still believe it. Simon, how are you?
I'm feeling very neglected.
I just got no social skills whatsoever, and people that know me in real life will know this. So it's all good. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So, Joel, we'll jump straight in. We've got a number of questions from the Secret World community and then some questions from Simon and I. Nothing too taxing, I'm sure. And Joel's mentioned that he's sitting in a park in Oslo at the moment, so it's a hell of a nice quiet park by the sound of it.
Well, I sort of found a hidden corner, yeah, so I ran away from everybody.
Well done. So I'm probably starting off, Joel, can you tell us a little bit, it's quite interesting, you know, growing up in Yamba to working for one of the world's better MMO companies, just can you give us a potted history of how you went from way to go?
Yeah, it's... I guess it's an interesting story. I was playing games in Yamba a lot. I was kind of one of the only kids there who actually played games because everyone else was surfing. And then I went to university in Newcastle and I met my wife there. I studied geology of all things, and then I switched to journalism when I realized how boring geology was. And then I studied journalism, and then I moved to Norway with my wife, who I met at university in Newcastle. And then I actually spent the first 3 years in Norway washing cars while looking for work as an English journalist, which was rather more difficult than you'd think. And eventually there was a writing job on Funcom, and I kept an eye on Funcom's pages because they were the only gaming company in Norway, and I was very interested in, you know, getting into the gaming industry. And yeah, so I applied for that, and I interviewed well, I guess, and then I got the job. And then from there, it's kind of been just a sort of a growth pattern of learning how things work in the industry and learning, you know, becoming a better designer over the years. And I've been there about 5 years and sort of started off as a quest designer and a writer, and then became, you know, a lead designer on the Age of Conan expansion. And then I jumped in as lead content designer on The Secret World a couple of years ago, and then recently, yeah, became game director. So it's been a bit of a path, yeah.
I reckon, hell of a trip. And just for those, and I know I'm unaware of this, what's the job description of a game director?
So my job is setting the vision for the game, making sure that the team sort of adheres to the vision. So that is sort of basically communicating with the team how the features that we put into the game will actually achieve our visionary goals, if you want. So I guess I direct the game in that sense. It's very very much about setting goals to sort of meet the goals of the actual vision for the game. And, you know, there's some business stuff as well, but the business side of it's not too bad for me. That's the producer's job.
Yeah, I was about to say. So it's a typical director versus producer sort of role demarcation.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we might as well jump into some community questions, and I'll give a shout out to each person that's asked them, so I'm not claiming credit for them. First one is from the Angry Postman, which I think is a pretty cool handle. And he's asked, Joel, the Secret World had an incredibly dedicated yet small audience almost from the onset, long, detailed alternate reality games cater to that audience, and yet it seems very little was done to advertise a game outside of this core group of people. Do you plan to help get the game more mainstream attention going forward? The game is awesome and unique and needs to be played by more people.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely vital for us now. Yes, we need to get more people into the game. It didn't sell as well as we hoped. We did actually have good sort of indicators that it would, which was a bit of a shock to everybody on the development team. You know, our marketing guys have been doing this for a long time, and they were predicting a bigger success than Age of Conan, based on, you know, website hits and, you know, people checking out the videos and all that sort of stuff. They have a lot of statistics around it. But what I think we failed to do was communicate exactly what the game was about. I think people kind of saw the concept and it felt a bit fuzzy to them. I think a lot of the sort of more mainstream people felt like, you know, this sounds interesting, but what is it exactly? And I think that that's something we need to refocus in our marketing, yes, definitely going forward. And yeah, we're doing a lot of initiatives in the coming months and weeks to bring more people into the game. And this weekend, for example, it's 50% off the game. So that's one for anyone who has time, can jump in and get the game now for half price. So yeah, things like that we'll be doing more of going forward. But in addition, we'll be retargeting our advertising more towards what we consider to be the audience that we're going to get into the game who will stay.
Okay, great. And you raise an issue about how things weren't exactly what you expected. One thing that stood out for me over the last couple of months is how relatively transparent Funcom have been with the struggles with sales, with the restructuring of staff and so on. How much has that been a strategic decision to be upfront and honest as much as possible, or how much is it just the natural personalities of the team and what they're doing?
I think like both Ragnar and I feel like communication with the community is very important. It's sort of been one of the things that we feel like it's okay to say that, you know, I think like some people would disagree, but it's okay to say that we messed up here or we failed here or we didn't do this correctly. I think people are very forgiving of that as customers, especially in, you know, this sort of space. But I think like in general, we, you know, all our financial information has to be public for the stock exchange here in Oslo anyway. So we have to, you know, we have to keep them informed about what's going on with the game. But I think from the point of, you know, communicating with the community, it's very important to us. It's, I guess if you want, we sold less than we hoped, but we still have that core community, and they're the people we want to hold on to. They're our evangelists. They're our, you know, if you want to think about the way Apple does their marketing, they have a bunch of people who go around and talk about their products, you know, and bring everybody into their circle, their cult, if you want. And that's, you know, the Secret World is a similar sort of thing. We feel like it's very high quality, and we feel like the people who love it really love it, and they'll bring in more people. So we really want to keep them happy as well.
Yeah, and if ever there was a game that attracts cults, it's going to be this one.
Yeah.
So there is that. No, that's good. I got a question here from Ed Goldstein. Ed's asked, now this is a bit of a long one, so bear with me, but it's a great question. The Secret World delivers a solid story, but the largest complaint from the community is that there is a lack of scaling to prepare people as they move from zone to zone. I think the largest problem is that once they hit Blue Mountain, the casual player finds that if they did not build their character correctly, that they're incapable of continuing on their own. So my question is a little complicated. Do you see any method by which you can either educate players that when they zone complete, that they have some understanding of the goal that they are working towards to allow them to say, wow, I'm ready for the next zone? Failing that, do you see any chance of granting those confused players an opportunity to reset their skill points? And then he's mentioned the largest problem seems to be players spending too many points on weapons rather than talismans and so on. And this is not limited to Blue Mountains, by the way. The same is true of Egypt, City of the Sun God, and finally Transylvania.
Yeah, I'll talk about this from two angles. First of all, I think we made some misjudgments on our behalf when it came to the difficulty of the game, because we made Kingsmith easier. Like, statistically, we made Kingsmith actually easier, and then Savage Coast was slightly easier than it should be, and then Blue Mountain was kind of exactly where we wanted the difficulty to be. So we kind of front-loaded the easiness of the game, if you want, which means that people were very unprepared when they left an area. And also, we don't communicate very clearly enough the way that, you know, skill points should be spent out. One of the things we're doing to address it is, first of all, with sort of identifying our core audience, there's a lot of people who really, really care about story and aren't really that good at, you know, MMO combat, if you want, yeah, or aren't really into MMO combat. And so one of the things that we've discussed is making the boss fights in the story mission just a little easier, because we feel like it's not really why people are there. Those aren't the point. I mean, if people really want the challenging boss fights, they'll go to the instances. They'll go to the dungeons. And so it's fine for us to sort of nerf a little bit the story boss fights. So we've been talking about doing that to allow people to really get into it and see the whole story without having to be, you know, really, really good at making builds. But in addition to that, we have what we call starter decks, which are coming in 1.4. Issue 4 is the update,
yep,
External name. And in that update, you'll get starter decks. Starter decks they're actually decks that are based upon the inner wheel, the base hive, if you want.
Oh, yep.
And those decks will give people guidance to get them into a good build earlier in the game. And that's kind of the aim of them, is to not, like some of the decks that we have, you know, they take upwards of 50 hours to achieve. And the ones, you know, we want to put in some that you can get in the first five to eight hours, and then players will really, you know, they'll have a build that works very well. And then, of course, it's just improving our communication about the way that people spend skill points and letting them know, you know, for example, if somebody is spreading their skill points thinly, and we should know, we have those stats, so we should be able to pop up a warning saying, you know, if you keep doing this, you may not be prepared for the next area, et cetera. So.
Okay, and is that something you desire? Because, I mean, the other argument, I suppose, is the fact that it is so fluid, it forces people to do a little bit of experimenting before they can progress, which can be a good thing to some people.
Yeah, it's kind of getting it right, I think, is the difficult part. But I think the content is weighted around, I think, if you complete about 70% of either the NPC missions or the item missions, then you're ready to progress to the next zone in terms of how many points you've gotten, skill point and AP. So if you're a completionist and you do 100% of both, you'll be very far above what you need to be when you reach the next area.
Yeah.
So it's also a matter of how quickly people want to push through. It's been very difficult. That's probably one of the hardest things about doing the setup with the no levels, is getting that right as well.
Yeah. And Simon, it probably shows you how much you and I suck that we can barely survive early Savage Coast.
Oh, well, I knew I sucked anyway. Yeah. So I enjoy playing the game. I'm not very good.
No.
Well, I will say that the Hell Hotel is sort of something that people are supposed to run past, actually.
Okay, that's interesting.
That was a bit of a legacy issue, because when we started on the project, I saw that, yeah, people had placed that location there, and those monsters were never really targeted to be that easy, if you want.
Yeah.
So they're quite a bit harder, and the way that they spawn and the amount of them that spawn makes it quite difficult as well.
Yeah,
so.
I think I ended up working that out eventually and did run past anyway. Now, Belladonna has asked a question, and it's a very critical one, is does your new position mean you can outdrink Ragnar?
I've always been able to outdrink Ragnar.
You're an Aussie.
Yeah, it's not really been a problem. He's a Viking, but, you know, the blood is thin, I have to say. Living in Norway, Viking blood is thin here.
And she does follow up with, as far as high-res in-game model viewers, is there any plan to build a high-res in-game model viewer?
We have one internally in our tools. You mean like for? Does she mean for external use for them to actually?
Yeah, I assume for anyone to be able to use. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen at least a couple of them posted on the forums. There is the database tool that was made for Age of Conan, the Yellow Gremlin database. You know, the one that draws out all the items from the database, that works for TSW as well. And I've seen people using it to draw out different pieces of the data. And I'm pretty sure there is a. At least I've seen on the forums a thread posted where they actually had a web page up that was, you were able to view all the monsters in the game, yeah, in their higher versions. Yep.
Yeah, she mentioned that there was a third party. I think it was more just whether there were any plans to make that an official thing.
Well, not at the moment. No. We're more focused on the internal side of the game at the moment.
No worries. Hyperjump Grandmaster via Reddit asked the question, what are the plans to make PvP more meaningful? And what he means by that is Are there any plans for open world PvP outside of the fight clubs, maybe a hostile server where PvP is always on after reaching a certain amount of skill points?
Okay. So first of all, open world PvP is not very likely to happen at all. Too much of the game relies on that not being the case, like other players being able to attack you. We'd have to do tons and tons of work with, like, for example, the cinematic setup to be able to make it work to have open world PvP. That would be a huge amount of work. But with regards to making PvP more meaningful, you'll see the first steps of that in issue 4. We have a PvP designer working full time on the PvP all the time, and we're making some changes to Fusang. We're also looking into, you know, player versus player that doesn't necessarily require it doesn't require the player to go to a specific location. It's more about the factions fighting each other in the playfields in different locations during special events. So we're looking into those sort of things, but they will never be sort of 100% all the time hiding from other factions while out in the open playfields PvP, because I think that's a lot of work and it's probably not going to gain as much in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even the server setup's different enough to other MMOs. I could see the challenges.
Yep. I mean, we could make a direct server for it. It's just a flag. I mean, we have it from Age of Conan. We can just turn a flag on, but it would break the game for so many people, because every time you're in a cinematic, someone comes and kills you. We don't have cinematic protection.
Yeah.
Players, as people have complained about with monsters as well. So
That's good. Voodoo Shark on Reddit says, are there any plans to streamline current skills and mechanics? And the double barrel to that is, will there be more consistent free trial offer as well? But yeah, skills and mechanics.
Yes. Skills and mechanics, we're definitely looking into streamlining. I think one of the complaints that we received on the systems team especially was that a lot of the skills feel too similar across the different weapon types. And that's something that we're going to address. The guys are looking into it, and we're looking for ways to do it. And we're also going to address it on the auxiliary weapons. The auxiliary weapons will start to introduce some very cool new mechanics. I think the next aux weapon is in issue 4 as well. I can't say what it is yet until marketing give me the go-ahead, but it's a cool weapon. People will like it. And we're doing something slightly different with some of these weapons. And then the other question regarding the trial, yes, absolutely. You'll see some news about that in about 2 weeks. There's some big changes going to happen with the trial setup.
Great. I'm actually going to jump in there with something I was about to ask anyway, which was how good was the response to the lifetime subscription offer, and is it something likely to be offered ongoing? But it sounds like that may link in with, you said there's an announcement anyway coming up.
It's not quite the same thing.
No.
The lifetime subscription thing is, I think it's going well. I actually don't have the numbers. I've only been game director for a week, so I don't have access to our numbers or anything yet, because that has to be cleared with the stock exchange. But I imagine it's going very well. I mean, the lifetime subscription is a big part of the core audience. So it's been taken up very well, and I think people are still taking it up after they play the game for a month and they see that they are going to continue with it, then they get the lifetime subscription. So we'll continue to keep it out for a while, and we'll definitely give some warning before we turn it off.
Great. Simon, over to you.
Thank you, David. Okay, well, I was going to ask if you had any little teasers or tidbits you wanted to drop out about future plans or upcoming issues, just anything you haven't already mentioned. Obviously not about any more auxiliary weapons, because you just said you can't, which is a shame.
I can't say what they actually are, but, I'll say that the one in issue 4 is something that you've seen in a lot of horror movies, and even almost has a movie named after it.
I guess.
See, that was a very obvious hint, but I didn't say it directly, so marketing can't shoot me.
No.
We have the raid in New York is coming with issue 4, which is exciting. I can say that players will be not only going back to their old friend Dave Screed in New York to start that one off, but they'll be meeting the characters from the CGI once again during that instance. So that's something for people to look forward to. We have the Halloween event that we just patched sort of all the background stuff for that. So it's ready to go live in a couple of weeks. And the Halloween event, I think, is something that is very cool because it's something that it's not really your typical Halloween event, and it's going to have people digging through their old Irish law books to find out more, which I think is very cool.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the awesome things about the game is you actually have to look.
Yeah. And then we're looking to add, I remember I talked about puzzle raids before launch where you actually had to solve investigation missions with large groups of people. And we're looking to get that in one of the upcoming issues. So within a few months, there'll be some actual investigation-style raids where you have to solve puzzles as a team. So that's cool stuff.
Interesting, yes. So congratulations, by the way, after the exploit problem pushing back issue 2, getting issue 3 out on schedule. I think that was a real morale boost for everybody. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. I mean, the team was working really hard. We really wanted to make 1.2, but of course, you know, when layoffs hit a company, and you know, it was a large amount of people, of course.
Oh,
the
yeah.
team was,
especially,
you know, it's just hard to get work done, you know. Yeah. it was interesting. It's like Martin posted, I think Martin tweeted that it seemed like more in Oslo, but I guess the TSW team in Oslo, yes, but like overall in Oslo it was about 50%, I think. So it was a kick, but you know, the team is very, how can I say, resilient, and they're getting more focused, and you know, the people who are left are sort of rolling up their sleeves now, and I've been to Montreal just a week and a half ago, and you know, the way people are sort of taking things is like, okay, you know, let's bring back our colleagues if we can, let's get things going, let's start building the game. So it's good to see.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, because I think it was mentioned quite early on that some of these layoffs were being considered temporary, just until a bit more traction was gained in the marketplace and a bit more monetization of the product started to happen, so that you can actually bring the staff back as the player base grew.
Yeah, Norway has a very interesting law regarding that, and that is sort of that you can put people on what they call, it's called permittering, it's like forced leave, and basically it's to save the company some money while they rebuild stuff, and they get the employees get 60% of their pay, and it's paid by the government, and they get that for like a year, and then you can bring them back within that year, and if you have to hire for another position, you have to hire the people back first. So they have quite good employee protection laws here, I guess.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes. So the we've already brought back 3 people. So it is happening already.
That's great.
We have already brought back several people who were on the TSW team, but they're actually been brought back to be on the Lego product. So but we are bringing back employees. So it's good, and it gives us hope, and you know, it's nice to see those faces back at the office, and kind of gives everyone like a boost.
Okay, so maintaining the output of new issues, you're pretty confident about that being able to go ahead on schedule without too much in the way of speed bumps.
Yeah, when I was in Montreal, I sat down with the team, and we sort of discussed this this pipeline of delivery to make sure that we were on track, because one of the things that sort of happened was we launched the game, and the first month was relatively easy because we still had a lot of people, and we had a lot of missions that we knew were kind of half done before we launched, so we would be able to just finish those off and push them in for one. And then 1.2 we were on track for, and then you know, everything sort of hit the fan. But 1.3 we had been working on as well, so we kind of knew, but we didn't really have a set routine on how to make all these deliveries. So when I was in Montreal last time, I sat down with the team, the guys who were there, and we sort of went over this pipeline that we created for the content team to make sure that, for example, the missions are out tested thoroughly, which was really important to us because, you know, we have this reputation of bugginess that we want to get past and we want to get rid of. And so we have these new testing routines, these new delivery routines, and we're fairly confident. Everybody in the team kind of signed off and agreed that these were completely possible and completely doable. And in addition to that, we sort of have this overlapping delivery plan, so that like somebody might be working on a feature that's out in 3 months, and somebody might be working on a feature that's out in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that may get a longer development time on these features. But when they come, they'll be coming month after each other. So it'll seem like they've, you know, been done quickly in a month when they've actually had a longer dev cycle.
Right.
So.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that's good. That's encouraging. Very encouraging. So obviously with issue two, we got the plastic surgery and the barbers. Are there any plans to do anything in addition to that as far as the personalization go of the stock model? I'm thinking more along being able to alter the body types.
I don't know yet if I'm going to manage to ninja in something for issue four, but if I do, then you guys will know then. But if I don't, then I will see. Part of the problem with the body type, like being able to change weight and so forth, is that the clothing is actually attuned to the body width. So the clothing system we have doesn't really allow you to have different body shapes. But I'm trying to ninja in a couple of things that will make people very happy, I think. But I don't want to talk about it because it's supposed to be a bit of a surprise, actually. So,
no, that's fine. This conversation never happened. We were not.
Yeah, no one listens, Joel.
No. Now, as you worked on the expansion pack for Age of Conan, have you found there's much? And obviously, Age of Conan had its hiccups here and there. Have you found that any of the lessons learned from Age of Conan have been applied to the Secret World?
Oh, absolutely! Like, yeah, hundreds of them. I don't even know where to begin. It's kind of interesting.
What are the biggest two, would you think?
I think the biggest two is technology needs to be completely stable.
Right.
So I think we nailed that for TestOU. I think the servers have been as solid as they can be. In terms of, I don't think people have had problems, you know, with the actual logging in process with being able to play. I think the play fields have had a relatively stable frame rate for most people, depending on the rig that they're running, of course. I think with Age of Conan, I don't remember the number, but it was like 95% of people who left Age of Conan, because we have stats where we track the servers. So 95% of people who bought the game and left when they reached Tortage the first time because the city killed their computer because the tech wasn't stable enough.
Right.
So once they reached that area, it just sort of their frame rate dropped to 4 and that was it. They stopped playing. So I think with TSW we tried to not only make the tech more even, but then in terms of content, one of the lessons learned, but I would say I learned this from the vanilla Age of Conan rather than the Godslayer expansion, was that the content needs to be consistent throughout the game. With Age of Conan, there was a lot of people, you know, talking about that, you know, we had voiceover and clearly a lot of polish on the Tortage area of the game, the beginning of the game, but then we hadn't put the polish levels into the later parts of the game. So it was something that I was really sort of, as lead content designer on TSW, I was super adamant about. We had like a person per each play field in the game, each zone had its own designer. And each of those designers was told, like, you know, your playfield needs to meet the quality. And kind of I was checking everything and making sure that we were on quality across the game, not just in the beginning. And that was really important to us. So that was those were probably two of the biggest lessons we had, I would say.
And just to jump in there, Joel, I was going to ask a question later on about what lessons you've learned from other MMOs. And you don't need to mention names necessarily, but are there some big mistakes you've seen other MMOs make that you've tried to avoid?
I'm just trying to think. I it's a bit weird. I play like pretty much every MMO that comes out, but I don't really judge them as a developer that much. Sometimes I'll see something and I'll sort of snort and say, like, why did you do it that way? But I think like one of the things that, for example, Martin and I were always talking about, and that is making sure that, you know, we really, really believed in the no class system in TSW. And we both really liked that idea, and like, you know, that was something I really was glad Martin was championing all the way through dev, was that we would, you know, allow people to sort of customize, because both of us were kind of like, you know, people play these games to enjoy them, not to have to, you know, make a tank and run it through, you know, 80 levels just so that they can, you know, have something to fill in their guild's needs. And so for us, that was kind of really important. And then I guess like with the crafting system, we want to expand upon it now. There's more we can do with it, but we were really, really sort of on target that we didn't want gathering in the game. We always felt like, you know, having people running around gathering, we just didn't feel like having gathering professions was something we were interested in. But I wouldn't necessarily say those are bad things about other MMOs. They're just things that we personally didn't like that much, so we wanted to change.
Yeah.
I think it's a good way to go because there is a – I mean, you can't please – well, you can't please people quite honestly half the time, especially the vocal minority that are putting things on forums or, dare I say, even the ones writing reviews. Because invariably they don't put enough time into what they're thinking about what they're actually saying or even bothering to research about what they're actually saying. So but I think it's important to have your vision, which you obviously have for this game, rather than worrying about is it enough like X or different enough to X and worrying about the micromanaging the demographic and trying to assume or guess what the public's reaction to it's going to be, because I think that's how you end up with things like One Direction.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like design, you know, making things designed in a way for, you know, I don't want to say to try and appeal to the highest number, but like I think it's more important to have a vision for the game. I think Ragnar was very good at that. He was pretty clear about what he wanted from the game. There were some things that, you know, that he made rules. For the development team, like, you know, for example, in TSW, he wanted you can't kill any human unless they're infected or an enemy faction. Those were his rules. Like, we won't have, you know, just normal human enemies in the game anywhere. And you know that we followed through on. And I think it's like it's things like that. They're not really important. People might not notice it every day, but it's just having those sort of guidelines that the dev team can refer to and think about. And I think just, you know, promoting a vision is really important for a game. Like I feel like, you know, Borderlands, for example, I think is a perfect example of a game with a very clear art vision for what they wanted for that game. And it's very irreverent and it's a very cool game because of it. And I think if it have those things, it would just be a generic shooter.
Yeah.
But I think very clear with what they wanted. And they did a very good job of bringing that forth. And I think, like, you know, it was the same with investigation missions in TSW. That was a very, very clear decision we made early. To make sure, and we were like, we won't pander, we won't give in to make this mass market. These investigation missions, they'll be optional, so you don't have to do them, but they'll be awesome for people who like that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's again one of the good things about The Secret World is it does so firmly offer something different for people that aren't hardcore raiders, aren't going to try and rush through all of the content and miss the bulk of it just so they can get to level cap.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It strikes me endlessly because they're the ones that start whining about things and knocking the game invariably because they've run out of things to do because they didn't play the game really as it was designed, yeah. Which is their right, obviously, but still.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit on our end as well, I have to say. We put in Nightmare Dungeons for these people and we give them gear increases through Nightmare Dungeons, so we do encourage that style of play. So I can't say we're entirely blameless in that people rush through to try and get the best gear because there is something of a gear increase through the game. I think in that way, I feel like the game does have elements which I say they're schizophrenic, but people say that it's associative personality disorder. So I have to call it correctly. But yes, it's in some ways the game does have this slight schizophrenia in the way that it puts a focus and an emphasis on storytelling and, you know, complex missions with the different interactions and, you know, investigation missions. And then on the other hand, it also says, oh, and here's the gear treadmill if you want to get on that. And that's something, you know, that we are addressing as well internally and something we're talking about improving going forward. And you know, we talked a little earlier about the way that we marketed the game. And I think we will be, you know, in terms of retargeting the marketing, it will be more towards the story side of things rather than the hardcore side of things because we really don't want to go in that direction. We want the game to be more horizontal now. You know, band 10 is kind of it in terms of gear progression. We don't want to go above that.
I think that is a really good approach because the vertical scaling, I think, has been done to death. Yeah. I think they're really getting quite tired of it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think the people who play our game don't necessarily, you know, they don't mind getting to the top, but once they're there, I don't think that, you know, they want us to every month add something that adds an extra, you know, 100 hours of playtime just by doing the same thing over and over again. I feel very strongly that people are quite happy to get, like, you know, a content patch that has 10 missions or 5 missions that might take them, you know, 6 or 7 hours. But that's enough. You know, people are happy with that. They don't mind as long as there's other things to do in the game. And so we're, you know, that's another thing we're looking at, is more of the things to do in between the monthly patches. So
now I'll just ask one more thing. There's a certain game has put out an expansion pack that involves pandas, and I just wanted your opinion. Rift is giving $1 per copy of Storm Legion purchase to what is it called now? Pandas International, I think it is. Cute idea or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The producer for TSW, Scott Jr., his brother is one of the lead systems designers on Rift. All right, so we're actually quite tight with the Tron guys. And I actually was talking to him at GC in Germany this year. We were having a few drinks together, and we were talking about the Chloromancer from Rift and the assault rifle each in TSW. You know, these ideas were kind of cross pollinated from the other game, and it was quite an interesting. Quite an interesting chat. But yeah, I think the Tron guys are hilarious. They do such a I don't know, they're just poking great fun at Blizzard for that. And I think that's kind of their style as well, being irreverent about their advertising has always been very irreverent about, you know, World of Warcraft. And I mean, I think it's really important to acknowledge that World of Warcraft has done amazing things for the MMO space and are bringing in millions and millions of customers. It's just that we'd all prefer if they'd let go of a few more so we could have them.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that will undoubtedly happen. I mean, the game is, what, 8 years old now? And I think plenty of people are going to buy Mr. Pandaria, but let's face it, I think they've sold about 700,000 box copies. Not sure how many digital, but there has been a general expression that sales have been down, certainly from Cataclysm, which I think was around the 3.2, 3.3 million. So invariably, the grip will loosen.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. And I mean, you know, all kudos to them. They've kept that position for a long, long time, and they still have, you know, exponentially more subscribers than pretty much any other game out there. So, you can't take that
without a doubt.
I played Myst, for example, and I made a Panda Monk to try out the Monk class. And you know, like, one thing that strikes me is, I've been playing Guild Wars 2, I've been playing our game, and one of the things that strikes me is the minute I was in a fight and somebody threw a projectile and I tried to roll out of the way, it strikes me that, yeah, okay, this game is nearly 10 years old, you know. As soon as I did that, I kind of went, yeah, okay, yeah, I forget that this game really is. And it actually surprises me a bit, I have to say, that the reviewers are so harsh on our combat and saying it's very much like WoW, when I think the only difference really between our combat and Guild Wars 2 is the projectile system that they have in Guild Wars 2 that we don't have. And that's, I don't really feel that they play that differently. But, you know, in terms of the same criticisms that people give us, like, you know, oh, it's still hitting buttons on a cooldown on a bar. I don't think Guild Wars 2 does that any differently. So I'm very surprised that those criticisms don't come out as much about Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, I'm afraid the sad reality is that there are certain game reviewers who are slavering loons. So, yeah, what can you do about that?
I don't like to knock reviewers. I think they have a tough time of it. I mean, it is an opinion at the end of the day, and, you know, players are going to slaughter them if their opinion doesn't go with popular opinion as well in a lot of cases.
You're a very diplomatic man. I respect that.
I just wanted to give some free marketing advice before I ask the very last question. That is that I think Funcom should jump on the charity thing and offer to fund a charity for restoring old British police cars.
Yeah, well, I mean, or you know, we should be, you know, paying for a series of Doctor Who and putting the TARDIS back in. We had the TARDIS in London for a while. I don't know. London's good. It was fun. They worked on London for a long time, and the guys who did it were from London, so, you know, they enjoyed it. They had a lot of fun with trying to bring out the sort of stereotypes of what London is.
Yeah, London's great. Love London. Yeah,
it's beautifully done.
So the final question, Joel, is what's a measure of success for you as game director for the Secret World over the next year? So in 12 months' time, how do you know that you've been successful?
That's a very good question. I actually have no idea. I guess I'll be happy if the team that we currently have is still there and growing. I'd like for the customer base to be growing. But in general, I want, you know, I think that I already feel like The Secret World is one of those games that people will be talking about in 5 years as like, oh, it's one of those games that people never appreciated for what it was.
Mm.
And I feel like that's already sort of, I feel like that's kind of the reputation we already have. You know, when I was in GC, I have to say, I probably met 100 developers from different companies who were telling me that like they love the game and that half of their development staff is sitting playing the game half the time. And I do think you'll find a lot of the influences from TSW creeping into other games. But I mean, as a measure of success for myself personally, I mean, it would be to I would like to grow the game. I would like for the numbers to go up every month. You know, I think an Eve-like scenario is probably too much to hope for, but I would like to stabilize and then grow the numbers of people coming into the game and you know, bring back the team. That would be also kind of one of my major goals. But I, in terms of like the in-game stuff, I want to continue doing what we do well, and I want to fix some of the things that we do poorly. Like the, I think the PvP can be improved a lot, and I think the faction conflict can be brought more to the forefront of the game, because I think that was something we heavily advertised the game on, you know, this conflict between the factions, and I don't think we quite delivered on that, both in PvE and in PvP, and I would like to do more to bring those things forward.
Excellent. Great response. And I know marketing sort of infiltrated a lot of this discussion, but I know PAX is coming to Australia. Is that likely to give you a free ticket home next year?
Oh, I don't know. I'd love it, though. Yeah. Actually, my wife and I are discussing coming back for Christmas anyway. We haven't bought tickets yet, but it's, yeah. So we haven't really decided. We might be back for a month at the end of this year. I have like, I don't think I've had a holiday in 2 years, so I have like 50 days of holidays saved up. So.
And you can't beat a summer Christmas.
No, you really can't. It's, you know, snow is nice and all, but it's very cold, and being outside and it's not really that fun when it's minus 40. So.
No,
there's nothing quite like sliding into a turkey coma in 40 degree heat.
Yeah, my sister's place. My father drunk. My brother passed out under the table. It's, you know, family Christmases are all the best in Australia.
Absolutely. Joel, thanks heaps for your time, particularly doing it on a weekend day and with the family in the park. So. I mean, I think it's fair to say Simon and I are pretty major fans and both lifetime subscribers. So looking forward to ongoing success, and I'm sure we'll be trying to grill you over coming months and years.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much, guys, for your time as well. And, it's always a pleasure to talk to people who know the game and have played the game and enjoy the game. So no worries at all.